The following is paid programming brought to you by WT Wealth Management. Nothing we discuss should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational purposes only. Please do your own research and speak to an investment advisor or financial planner before making any investment decisions. All right, welcome to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least. I'm your host, Jeff Horvitz, and Glenn, welcome. We've got a big one here. It has to do with the banking system, and I think that's something that is on a lot of people's minds nowadays, especially with what's happened recently. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think your goal here is to do this over two parts because it's quite a bit. So starting with the U.S. banking system and then moving on next week, I guess, to the Federal Reserve and how all that works.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
It'll be fun. But I think it'll be enlightening and really help the listeners have a better understanding, because the more that we know, the more that we can make informed and educated decisions. So that was kind of the thought behind doing that show. And the other thing I was going to say is we've been doing a lot of client meetings, and probably the last 15 of them, I'll ask, hey, do you know how the banking system works? And they kind of look at me and go, kind of. And so I explained to them kind of all the ins and outs. They're like, oh, okay, now this is making sense with maybe some of the recent banking troubles that we've seen on the news. So, yeah, I think it'll be a great topic to explore more.
What banking troubles? I don't remember any.
Yeah, well, it's been a few, yeah.
Yeah, there's absolutely been a few. And so you want folks to learn more about the monetary system and one of the most important things out there. So I guess the simple place to start, Glenn, is what is the U.S. banking system? Maybe give us all the nuts and bolts on that as best you can.
Yeah, it's really just a framework, financial institutions that provide a variety of services to individuals and businesses. They take in deposits, they make loans, they do investments. And really that kind of just sums it up. They, you know, bunch of different financial services that they offer, and a bunch of different banks. I mean, in every town, there's probably like 10, 15 banks, you know, there's quite a few. So
yeah,
they're everywhere.
And then we'll get in next week to the Federal Reserve System and go over that a bit. So it takes the deposits from its customers, right?
Yep, and that's one of their functions.
That's one of the functions. And then
and keep it safe, make, right? That's the idea, right? Is they take the deposits.
Well, you would hope.
So it's safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't want to have six figures of cash somewhere at your house. That's probably going to make you nervous. So you give it to a bank, and they also provide some security, or at least protection from someone coming in stealing it.
Yeah.
What you're probably alluding to is a whole nother subject.
Well, yeah. Keeping it so, because they loan out the money.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so I guess talk about that a bit.
Yeah. So I think that's the one area when I ask people about that they're really probably the most unfamiliar with is how banks function in that capacity. So they call it fractional reserve banking. And what that means is each bank has a reserve requirement, meaning what percentage of that deposit you just made do they have to keep on hand available. So say you deposit $100 into your local bank and their reserve requirement is 10%. So that means they only have to keep $10 on hand at the bank or, you know, on their books, and they can loan out the other 90%, or they can invest the other 90% or $90. So, you have that $90, and say another person comes in and you say, I'm going to loan you $90. And here's $90, and you charge them interest. That's how they make money. And then that person takes their 90 that they just got loaned and deposit it back into the bank. And now the bank can loan out on that again as well. So,
it could grow exponentially.
Yeah. That's where it starts to get complicated. So in that last scenario, that person that deposited $90, you can then loan out 81. And then the next customer, if they deposit the money right back into your bank, you can loan out, and you'll have to keep 10% on reserve. So on 81, that's, what is that? $74 ish, 73. Yeah.
Something like that.
You can see they just keep doing that over
radio
and over.
Yeah.
So, the important thing to recognize is what is that fractional reserve for that particular bank. And, cause that determines a lot. And then what are they doing with the money too? Cause they have a bunch of different options. They can do the loan process, and they charge interest, which is how they make money. They can also do investments too. So they can take the money you deposited and invest it. Now investing is a broad term. Most banks, when they invest, quote unquote, they are usually buying very safe assets like treasury bonds or fixed income products. Usually buying high risk stocks is kind of frowned upon because it's so easy for it to go south.
And but they so, could.
They could, yeah. Yeah. And I think that was part of the 2008 problem with Lehman Brothers is that they were making risky loans on those subprime mortgages, and then they're investing their money back into it as well. So it was like a house of cards. It was just doomed from the beginning because of that reason.
But even the more safe, is that what happened with Signature Bank and these couple banks? Because they were investing the quote unquote really safe assets, the treasuries.
Yeah.
But then interest rates spiked. Mm-hmm. Would they raise interest rates 9 or 10 times over the course of a year?
A few times.
So then those old treasury notes that they invested in maybe 6 months or a year before were worth less.
Yeah.
And they kind of got themselves caught in that.
Yeah. So here's a good example. So person deposits money into your bank and you say, let's use the same $100. We can add just a bunch of zeros because it's easy math that way. Mm-hmm. But $100, and they take 90 of it and deposit it into a U.S. Treasury, which is just a loan to the U.S. government. And it pays you, say, 3%, maybe, you know, a couple years ago, and you lock it in for 10 years. But then they've been raising interest rates since then.
Yeah.
And now that same loan to the government is paying 4.5%. And so your 3% bond is going to naturally have a price discount if you have to sell it. But if you keep it until maturity, it doesn't matter. You get your principal back. So SVB Bank had a bunch of those, and they were just planning on holding it to maturity. And the problem they got into is they had to make all those
withdrawals.
They had to facilitate all the withdrawals from the customers, and in order to facilitate that, they had to sell all those fixed income products, and they sold it at a massive loss.
Okay.
And so that was part of the big issue there is, well, if you think about it, any bank would probably have trouble if everyone pulled out their money simultaneously, because no bank has 100% of all the cash on hand.
Yeah.
That's just not how the system works.
Or even close to 10% by what you were talking about, Glenn, right? I mean, so classic run on the banks, and people demand their money and get nervous, and then it forced them to sell the assets they had at a discount.
Yeah. And, I thought we learned as a nation not to do bank runs, but maybe we're learning it all over again. Cause any bank, it's going to put pressure on them to, if every single person tries to pull out their money simultaneously, they're going to have to try and, you know, sell off a bunch of stuff and price out at a loss, call in all their loans and notes. And it's just going to be a disaster. Now, some banks are better than others as far as, how much they keep in reserves.
Sure.
And so that's where the next, layer of, when you're looking at a bank, of what's important is, well, what are their, what do they have reserves on hand, that actually are available for, deposits to make good on those, withdrawals.
Yeah.
And so, SVB was like 93% of their assets or something like that was, loaned out or invested. And so,
not readily accessible.
Yeah, they had like 7 or 8% available on hand.
And then you had billionaire like funds and stuff going in and saying, I'm taking my money out. I think Peter Thiel was one of those. And and then the next person's like, well, maybe I should do that, because each bank account, the sticker's on the window, Glenn. Yeah. $250,000, right?
FDIC guarantee.
In insurance, so people would get nervous if they had more than that. Do you think it's over? Or, I mean, nobody has a crystal ball. I saw Warren Buffett was talking about, hey, he thinks more may be coming, but the Fed's moved pretty quick on that one.
Yeah. I think in like before they implemented the FDIC backstop, I'll have to double check the dates. I want to say it was in the early 1900s, but before that, they were having like 10,000 banks fail per year. Mm-hmm. And then once they implemented the FDIC kind of as a fail-safe, then they were like having 10 or less banks fail per year. So that guarantee by the government and the Federal Reserve really brought a lot more safety and stability to the banking system. And so, as you're alluding to, Silicon Valley Bank, one of the big names out there, looks like they're going to get bailed out and they're going to get some help from the Federal Reserve, the government. And whether or not that's right or wrong is a different conversation, but that's kind of what it looks like is going to happen. And it happened in 2008 too.
Yeah.
They too big to fail is what they said. And they just bailed out the banks for what was really just bad behavior on their part.
Okay, let's get more into, and you're listening to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Leese, the secondary market and how banks sell their loans, I guess, when you make a loan. So I want to get into that a little bit more. And if you've got any questions for Glenn, give him a call at 928-225-2474. And you can always email as well, intelligentinvesting@wtwealthmanagement.com. Okay, so we talked a bit about how they get the deposits in and how they then can loan out that money, and they only keep a certain amount, usually 10% on the books or so, charge interest on loans, which means that the borrowers pay back. So talk about that. You make a loan. You think a lot of times that they keep that on their books forever, that the bank,
no, a lot of times they're always going to
have it at Glenn's bank, for example.
Yeah. A lot of times banks sell their loans where they say they do a mortgage and they get it approved and everything's good to go. And they may say as a bank, we really don't want to hold this mortgage for the next 15, 20, 30 years. We'd rather just sell it to another institution, another financial institution, and just get all that money back. And maybe they'll make a little bit of money on the initial purchase, the upfront interest, that sort of thing. So that happens pretty commonly. You may have even had that happen in your mortgage, is that all of a sudden you see a different name on your mortgage statement. It means your loan was sold. Yeah. And so I knew this actually from a car dealership I worked at a long time ago, is they would make the loan and then like 30 minutes later, it's gone.
They'd
sell as soon as it got approved. They did not want to hold that loan, which made me, wonder why. Why didn't they want to hold that loan? Was it a bad loan, or they just weren't in the business for long-term loans? I don't know. But
they make some fees on the loan and they just get it off their books.
That could be it too. Yeah. Yeah. So the banking system, they can also sell out those debt products, which they're doing in 2008. 2008 is the CDOs and mortgage-backed securities, all those kinds of things. They're just selling the debt to other people.
I remember a loan. Yeah, it was Bank X, for example. Mm-hmm. And then you get the first statement maybe from them, and then there was just somebody else. It's like, oh, we're your mortgage holder now.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, okay, who are you?
They just
sell you don't. And you're like, okay, I guess that's how it is now. Okay, so before we go to break here, Glenn, how is new money created? Because we oftentimes think about the old printing press. It's just zipping out new $100 bills or $50 bills.
Yep.
But there's another way.
Yeah. So there's a printing press. There's a computer on the keyboard.
Yeah, just add some zeros.
Just add some zeros at the Federal Reserve level. The other way is through the banking system. The banking system actually creates a tremendous amount of new money. And so let's go back to that example of $100 gets deposited. Take 90 of it and loan it back out.
Okay.
That person takes the 90, deposits, loan that back out, and continue and so forth and so forth. And then all of a sudden now you have all these dollars that were created off of that original dollar. And so it actually creates money by that process, by the fractional lending process itself. They can create new money out of kind of just thin air.
Yeah.
So, it's actually, I never knew that until a couple of years ago. And I was like, wow, that's fascinating. Banks actually create money.
Yeah. They're the ones that do it through the commercial lending. They're the lending process.
Yeah. They can do it through consumers, commercial mortgages, whatever they want to do. Cause, when they get that deposit back in after they've done the loan, now it comes back on their balance sheet as a positive, and they can loan that back out. And then, more gets added. So it's just this ongoing process of where they, started with $100, but then towards the end, maybe they have $175.
Yeah.
Because a bunch of how many times they loan.
And you
it
multiply
out.
That by, you mentioned all the banks that are in this country and in every community. Of course, it's not just your banks. You got credit unions, things like that.
Yep. All the same.
So all really the same. Another topic we should probably do another time, Glenn, would be how there's been a push for a central bank digital currency. Would that take out the commercial banks from creating this process and creating money, I guess, out of thin air? And then it's the feds just doing it directly all the time. Just food for thought. I mean, because there's definitely a push for that right now.
Yeah. If you change the dynamics of the fractional lending system, it'll definitely make less dollars that are created in that process. So if the federal government says, we're going to have the Fed dollar or the Fed coin, whatever it may be, and that's the only way you can loan out, we'll just do all the loans. That seems really not up their alley. Yeah. So this is a big task. I wouldn't want to take on all the loans.
Another topic for another day. Yeah. Well, let's get into, when we come back, some of the other services that the banks actually offer, the guardrails, I guess, the supposed banking regulations and all that's supposed to protect everybody out there. Mm-hmm. And you're listening to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least. Give Glenn a call, 928-225-2474. That's 928-225-2474. And you can also email intelligentinvesting@WTWealthManagement.com. Don't go anywhere. We got a lot more to come back in just a few minutes. You're listening to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least. Give Glenn a call right now at 928-225-2474. That's 928-225-2474. More Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least when we come back. Welcome back. You're listening to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least. Give Glenn a call at 928-225-2474. Also email intelligentinvesting@WTWealthManagement.com. We're talking about the banking system. Next week, we'll get into the Federal Reserve a bit more. But before we move on, Glenn, talk about some of the guardrails that are supposed to be there with banking regulations. What other things do we get from the banks? I mean, what are the services?
Yeah,
just kind of round out the whole topic.
Yeah, banks offer credit cards, they offer mortgages, investments. Most banks do. They also, in addition to that, do payment processing. So you got your debit card or credit card, you swipe it at Starbucks. Starbucks says, charge $10, it goes to the bank electronically. Yep, the funds are there. Process it through. So they facilitate the sending of money electronically back and forth. And then even checks as well, the same thing. And so that's the other thing that they do in addition to what we talked about. It's not just the loans, the deposits, is some of the other ancillary services.
People still write checks.
I still have checkbooks.
You still do?
Yeah.
I
find their use occasionally.
My wife says we have one somewhere.
one singular check.
Yeah, one check. Just in case. They make a lot of money on those fees, on those debit and credit card transactions.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think a lot of people realize that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and some of them are 2%-ish. Can be as high as 3 for some credit cards. And evidenced by, if you've ever had a credit card and you do a cash advance or whatever, they charge you that 3 or 4% up front. The other times when you're using your card, you may not see that 3% charge. It's because the merchant is absorbing that and raising their prices accordingly.
Yeah.
So yeah, the banks are definitely making money on the transactions. I mean, Visa and MasterCard are just absolutely monstrous.
Raking
companies.
It in. Yeah. 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 And everything's really a little bit more, 2-3% more if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because everybody uses that card. Even nowadays, for a cup of coffee, it's hard. You rarely see people whipping out some change or a couple dollars.
Yeah, that's why you see those signs where it's like, if your purchase is less than $5, we're going to attack on 50 cents.
Yeah.
It's because of the minimum transaction fees that they incur. Like, if you just buy a pack of bubble gum with your debit card, they get a little annoyed.
Yeah, probably losing money because there's that minimum fee, like you said.
And then it cuts into their profit margin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so the guardrails. Uh-huh. And banking regulations, and a lot of people listening are familiar with 2008 and how the system really failed. So there's supposed to be regulations out there that protect people from the failures and bad doings of banks if they get into trouble and invest in things and they're not supposed to. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah. So one of the other jobs of the Federal Reserve is to oversee the banking system and make sure there's stability in it. And so the Federal Reserve implements a number of criteria that the banks need to meet. And one of them is their capital requirements. So the minimum amount they need to have is that buffer. They'll say, okay, here's the amount of money you need to keep in case that you incur a loss on your investments, that sort of thing. And then additionally, on top of that, it's liquidity requirements. How much you actually have liquid available to make the deposits. Because you can have, say, 10% available for withdrawals of your total assets, but you only need liquidity of say 5% because the other 5% is just sitting there as a buffer or, mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. So you've got your liquidity requirements, and then they also, the Federal Reserve oversees banks and does a lot of risk management. So they look at what they're doing with those deposits that come in and say, are you being overly risky and are you prudent with some of these, the dollars that are deposited in. And if they're too risky or they're overextended or they've been overlending, they will definitely, impose changes, you know, say, hey, you're required to make these changes to your system. And I think maybe in the last couple of years, they've been more friends to the bank. You know, Federal Reserve was like all kind of buddy buddy with a lot of the big banks mm-hmm. and banking systems. But in reality, they're the overseers. They're the, you know, the supervisor, if you will, the boss. And so at times they got to, you know, take action, say we have to make a change here. Otherwise it's going to be a big problem.
And sometimes they miss it. But then sometimes Silicon Valley Bank, which you mentioned, Glenn, they actually had to go in and say, we're taking over.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, by the Federal Reserve not enforcing their policies more strictly, which is, I think, what was kind of happening a little bit. It just made it so when banks run into trouble, the trouble is magnified they're already kind of in a predicament, if you will. So, so those are some of the things the Federal Reserve is, you know, monitoring their risk, monitoring their liquidity, you know, monitoring their, reserve requirements. And are they actually cash on hand? What are they doing with their deposits? Are they buying treasury bonds or are they buying, stock in some tech startup company or something.
Trying to make up the losses.
Yeah. So SVB was actually interesting because their loans were primarily to startup companies. In mm-hmm. fact, I think about 50% of all startups, in the United States got their funding from SVB. So that was like their bread and butter.
Wow.
And startups are risky. Hopefully you get your money back, but there's a chance it goes under and business fails and, you know, they default on the loan. So
ramifications of that might be felt for a while as far as startups who were expecting money, or maybe they're still doing it. They're still in existence. The feds have just taken them over, but I wonder if that spigot kind of was cut off as far as funding for a lot of startup companies going forward.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the banks looked at that scenario and might get a little bit more gun shy as far as making riskier loans and just be a little bit more prudent because they don't want to have what happened to SVB happen to them. And, each bank, you know, has their amount that you can look it up, like how much they have for reserve requirements, how much they're lending out, how much, you know, yada, yada, yada. And some banks are a lot stronger than mm-hmm. others. The big banks are in, you know, they're in good shape. SVB was just, it was pushing it to the absolute max and then some.
Yep.
The other thing I was going to say the Federal Reserve does is the FDIC insurance. And so that's the 250, deposit insurance. So that way, if the bank goes under, the Federal Reserve is basically saying, hey, we'll back that, account for up to $250,000. And so,
through the FDIC.
Yeah. So, you know, that gives people more, confidence in the banking system. I mean, imagine if you went in to go deposit your money and they're like, well, if we make it, we make it. And if we don't, you're out of luck. You're going to say, well, I'm not going to deposit a bunch of money with you. You know, you could go under and I have no control over that and I lose all my money. But if they have the FDIC guarantee, at least there's a backstop where you can limit some of those losses. And as long as you don't have over the threshold, you know, it's reasonably the reasonable assumption is if the bank goes under that you'll be just fine. You'll get your deposits back.
All right. A lot on banking. And I always encourage, and you do, Glenn, as well, to subscribe to the podcast because you might want to listen back and catch something what was that?
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of episodes up there now. Mm-hmm. Look up Intelligent Investing on just about any podcast provider out there.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to talk with Glenn, I'm always willing to have that conversation about your individual situation. You can call Glenn Leist at Intelligent or at WT Wealth Management. get my things mixed up here at 928-225-2474. That's 928-225-2474, or email intelligentinvesting@wtwealthmanagement.com. So next week, let's get into the Federal Reserve.
We talked a lot about it today.
Yeah.
So I think the next logical step is talking about what they do as a whole.
Yeah. Probably some history there as well. We should have a lot of stuff for you. Okay. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you soon. The following has been paid programming brought to you by WT Wealth Management. Nothing we've discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation was for informational purposes only. Please do your own research and speak to an investment advisor or financial planner before making any investment decisions.